What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Pro football full circle.
Carr takes a snap from the gun. Pump fake. Going to go deep down the middle. Got it. Ruggs grabs it. Jackpot, baby. Henry Ruggs goes the distance.
Well, we're 6-2 last year on the road. So it's not like, you know, we're going home celebrating. We've got two wins, two AFC wins. We got to get ready for Miami, so we're going to keep our level-headedness and proud of our accomplishments. Yet, I think this coaching staff and this team is going to try to find ways to get better because we have to. We've got a number of injuries.
Week number three is here. Welcome to Pro Football Full Circle right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network, Sirius Channel 204. Joe Lisi and George Kurtz kicking it around. NFL action week number three. Big game tonight in Houston between Carolina and the Texans. Davis Mills does get the start tonight. We'll see if he can get off the schneid and take this team to 2-1 with Davis Mills, the former Stanford standout, taking on Sam Darnold and the crew. Get into that game a little bit later. But you heard the injury news. The Colts, George, preparing for Carson Wentz potentially not making the start Sunday. They have both Jacob Eason and Brett Hundley taking snaps. What I did find ironic is, based off that news, that line right now has inched in favor of Indianapolis. Right now on the FanDuel Sportsbook, Tennessee only a 5-point favorite. Yesterday when we broke this game down, it was 5.5. I still think the Colts have to run the football, but give me your thoughts, because I really think they should go with Jacob Eason. Brett Hundley has been out of football for a period of time now.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if it's not. I think Eason gets the start. We'll see how he plays, and maybe Hundley has to come in. But if it comes down to Hundley and there's no injury here, boy, the Colts are in a lot of trouble. I imagine that Wentz does start this game. Wentz caught quite a bit of grief, more than you normally see for an injured player. I mean, analysts questioning it, really questioning it, or just want to play. How did he not go back in there in that last series? You know, and I have to admit, you know, you see him on the sideline practicing dropbacks. It looked like he was okay. You know, I'm not saying he was faking it, but it looked like he was okay where he could at least do it. They taped it up and you could play a series there. For him not to go back in, I guess what's bothering everybody, that he couldn't do it for one series there. So it wouldn't be a good look for him if he can't play this game either. That being said, not sure it matters. You know, going to Tennessee again. Tennessee maybe figured out their game last week against Seattle, especially in the second half versus Seattle. Colts are in a whole lot of trouble. Oh, we talked about this all offseason, this first five games, man. It's not getting any easier here. They need a W. They need it now. And this will be a huge win. You know, interdivision win. You know, they're the only team you're worried about is Tennessee. They're 1-1. You win this game, you're all tied. You've beaten them head-to-head. You'd be actually in okay shape here if you can beat them here. So this is a huge game for the Colts. And like I said, I think Wentz has to play in this game.
Yeah, outside the Indianapolis Colts, obviously 0-2 on the season, looking for their first victory. Is there another team, in your opinion, that is in desperate need of a win, even if they are, let's say, 1-0, 1-1, or 0-2 at this point? I think, for me, a team that's in desperate need to win this coming Sunday is the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I know that they got the Week 1 victory over Buffalo, but for me, you saw last week with Ben Roethlisberger a little bit injured, the pectoral muscle now becoming a concern, the lack of consistency in the running game. This team is starting to maybe go the way we thought they would go, especially at the end of last year where they lost four straight games. And now if they lose this game to Cincinnati, only a 3-point favorite at home in Heinz Field, maybe there's more room for concern for Steelers fans, especially through the month of September heading into early October.
While I get your point, I can't put the Steelers in the must-win category. The whole division's 1-1, so it's not devastating if you lose, but I get your point that you don't want to, here we go again with Pittsburgh.
Well,
I get it.
And I that understand, does seem to and I'm, right, not records-wise. I'm talking about an identity, though. You know, obviously, to develop an identity is bigger than the wins and losses right now. And the identity of this team was to obviously run the football with Najee Harris. That really hasn't been there consistent after the first two games of the season.
Hence the I understand well where you're going with that. but no, I'm not putting them in the must-win category. The New York Giants, they're in the must-win category. You want to talk about a team where here we go again. They're already in here we go again because they're 0-2 for, what, the fifth, sixth straight year. It's what they always do. So they're in here we go again. They play a very, how can I be nice about this, a very bad, awful, terrible Falcons team. Yeah, you can at home, can't lose to them. Can't lose to them, or else the season's gone. You'll be 0-3, at least two games behind somebody in that division, Dallas or Philadelphia, more than likely, since they play each other. So Giants are in must-win category for me. I'm only putting teams in here, by the way, that, you know, had a legitimate shot at something. I'm not putting the Detroit Lions in this category. Your Minnesota Vikings. They're
yep.
there.
There's, all right, they got some problems. I agree 100%. That's
should've
a great
won last
call
week.
On that.
Yeah, they should have won last week. That's on your coach for playing for a field goal. He had to, what, he had 40 seconds and he played, still went for the field goal there. Just 8 timeout rather than keep going for it. And of course, the kick has to be made.
Two games now.
37 yard field goal. Right. Has to be made there. I think that might be it as far as the must win people. I mean, I can't call it a must win, but you know, Seattle, who's playing Minnesota, you sort of threw away that game last week. That whole division just doesn't lose. Everybody else is 2-0. You know, you lose here, you're like allowed to be two games behind somebody in that division. They're close to it, but I'm not putting Seattle there. But there are a couple teams. Minnesota, Giants, definitely there for me. Indianapolis is there. I would make that my top three.
We'll see. I mean, I think identity, especially at the early part of the season for all of those teams, you need to start to find consistency heading into the month of October. We'll see how it plays out. George and I will break down this game tonight in Houston. Week number 3 on the horizon. Keep it where it is. Joe Lisi and George Kurtz right here on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
Circle, Joe Lisi and George Kurtz right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network, breaking down NFL action week number 3. Talk about this game in Houston. You heard in the beginning, Davis Mills does get the start tonight. Carolina was an 8-point favorite yesterday on FanDuel, now currently -7.5. -120 on the FanDuel Sportsbook. You want to take a shot on the Texans. They're 2-0 against the number. +7.5, -102. Total set at 43.5. Juice to the under, George, -118. 104, -104 to the over. I really like the way Carolina's playing. 2-0. I expected this early on. They're really moving the football consistently. Sam Darnold coming into his own. But that front seven has really looked good early on, containing New Orleans. I think there's no way they don't win this game and cover. The only question is 43.5 with Davis Mills, the rookie, getting the start. I could see this total going under now, right? We had two games early, Dallas, Tampa Bay, New York, and Washington that went and trended over. I think this is an under in Houston.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be hard for me to go for the over here. It's funny. All 6 standalone games, all the primetime games, they've all gone over. Right? We're 6-6 there, but this should make it 6-7. This game tonight, it's going to be rough for Mills. Right? Carolina is playing and playing well. I think the only chance really Houston has in this game is Carolina, for some reason, is looking past them. Right? If they're already looking at next Sunday, you know, then maybe I could see this. But other than that, I think they play Dallas, so I guess it's a possibility. But listen, you go with the rookie quarterback as a team that's playing well, but it's a night game. It's in Houston, but Carolina's going to be jazzed up for this. Right, they're going to be jazzed up. So I don't see this at all. I think Carolina's going to hold them over like 38 minutes tonight. So I don't even think Mills is going to be on the field much. So I think everything's going to go Carolina's way tonight. I'm big on the Panthers. And I'm also big on trying not to watch this game tonight. I'm going to be finding something. I tried my best to ref tonight, but the rink is closed. So maybe I'll fold clothes tonight. And I'm not kidding.
Well, I mentioned that front seven, right, and in terms of how dominant they have been in back-to-back games, contains Zach Wilson, contained Jameis Winston, and now you have Mark Ingram, right, in this offense. 35.5 prop tonight, minus 110 either way. I go to the under here in this matchup. I think they fall behind early. The running game is non-existent. I think that they become one-dimensional, and that allows Carolina to cover this number. I like the physicality of the offense and defensive lines of the Panthers. I just don't see any way that the Houston offense gets into a rhythm, and so that's why I'm leaning to Ingram with the under. And then when you look at Darnold in terms of his passing total, do we have any confidence in the secondary of Houston right now? Sam Darnold's on fire. 258.5 is light to me. Minus 110 either way to the over or under. I lean to Darnold over. I mean, you got to go with the consistency of this offense. He's dumping the football off to Christian McCaffrey, finding DJ Moore. He's going through his reads and progressions. Looks like a confident quarterback to me with the tutelage of Joe Brady. So why buck that trend heading into this matchup in Houston right now?
Once again, I agree with you. My thinking is this. I'm trying to figure out what FanDuel is thinking here. And I think they're going with, well, you know, we think this game's going to be a blowout, which means not much passing in the second half. That's where I'm going with that, if you're going to play devil's advocate here. And I don't necessarily think they're far off, because that is how I think the game script's going to go. I do think it's going to be a game where Carolina is in easy control in the second half. And it's not a divisional game. It's not even a conference game. I think Carolina's going to be like, you know what? Let's get the hell out of here. Let's get a W and get out. Get our extra 3 days off here and get prepared. I said, if they are playing the Cowboys next week, get prepared for Dallas, that sort of thing. And I think that's pretty much a good way to go about it, too. You know, get the W doesn't mean much. We don't care if it's closer than we possibly be. But, you know, we don't need to score 35, 38 points. Once the game's under control, fine. We're done. Let's go. You know, that sort of thing. I don't necessarily agree with that, mind you, but I can see where FanDuel's going with it. So I like the over for Sam Darnold as well here. So I'm still going to bet the over prop. But it is in the back of my head where Carolina may put themselves on cruise control in the second half.
True, but if you're Cully and the crew right now and you have the rookie in the lineup, are you going to take a conservative approach? I mean, they put up 21 points on Cleveland last week. They knocked off Jacksonville in week number one. Nobody's expecting you to win this ball game or many others in 2021. So why not throw caution to the wind? Why not try and develop Davis Mills? Why not put it five wide and let him chuck it all over the yard tonight? I'm just thinking big picture. If Davis Mills, let's just say, is the future of your franchise, why not throw caution to the wind and try to get him as much development as possible? 213.5 for Davis Mills to me seems a little bit light as well. Now, I understand it's let's call it an above average defense in Carolina, especially after 2 weeks, right? He's going to have to read coverage, and they're going to force him to read coverage. But to your point, why not just open it up tonight for Davis Mills in that offense?
Well, is he ready? Man, he's the third.
It doesn't matter if he's ready, does it?
Sure, it matters if he's ready. If he's not ready, then he's going to throw 18,000 interceptions here. We're going over tonight. You know, if you think he's going to let him throw 40 passes, that's not good. He's the third-string quarterback. This is not a first-round quarterback that was selected. It's not Trey Lance, Fields, Lawrence, Mac Jones, Zach Wilson, who we had to get in there. This guy's, a third-, fourth-round pick who wasn't expected to play. All right, so everything that's happened with Deshaun Watson, now the injury, that's why he's thrown in there. Hey, he's not ready to play. It's highly unlikely. So I don't see. They may have to throw caution to the wind if they're down by 17-0, which wouldn't shock me in the least. But the game plan, I would be very surprised if Cully game plans this. We're going to throw the ball up and down the field here. My guess is they're going to do what every coach does. I'm not saying it's right, but they're going to follow the script here. You know, run, protect the quarterback. Run, protect the quarterback. Try to eat clock, keep the other team up the field. It's not going to work because Panthers are going to score. You know, the Panthers are going to take control of this game. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I don't think the game plan at all was to, get Mills out there and have him throw 50 passes. I do think they want to develop him. And I think once the season gets out of control, you sort of have to put him in there anyway because you got to He's not the quarterback. I don't even think he's the quarterback of the future. They're going to trade Watson. They're going to get their whatever. What they want? 3 first-round picks, 2 second-round picks, your firstborn, and a brand new car. They're going to get all that eventually, and they'll use that to get their next quarterback. I don't think it's going to be Mills here. With that being said, they should find out. You know, if once Taylor's going to be out the next 2-3 weeks, you should find out about him. But I wouldn't just throw all course to the wind tonight and find out right away. Let's not forget, they've had 3 days to prepare for his first start. All right, there's no way he's ready for this.
No, he's completed 8 of 18, 102 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. On the flip side, Taylor has completed 31 of 30, 44, 416, 3, and no interceptions. And I understand that. I understand that he's not Deshaun Watson. I understand that maybe he's not your marquee quarterback. But still, why not develop him? I understand 3 days. But nobody's expecting Houston to do anything this year. Not even the organization as a whole. Do we realistically think that Houston's going to make a run at a wild card or even challenge for a division title? So if that's the case, and we knew that going in, why not develop him even at the worst scenario? If you develop him, you could always trade him a little bit later if you plan on getting rid of Watson in terms of that situation. And why not open up the offense? I don't understand, like, he's not ready. He's in the NFL. He's ready. Whether he produces or not, that's the mindset that I cannot stand about coaches, about when we break these games down, oh, he's not ready. He's in the NFL. Then if he's not ready to play, you cut him and you get a guy that can go in and produce. I mean, Taylor Heinicke last year came off the street and put up 300 against Tampa Bay's defense in a playoff game.
Well, you're talking two different things, Joe. You keep saying develop him, and that's pretty much throwing him to the fire.
But how you develop him is you give him an opportunity to produce. I mean, he's a quarterback in the NFL. He's not some kid that's, you know, in a cubicle 9 to 5 and you have to train him. He's trained like an elite athlete. He played at a Power 5 conference in the Pac-12. He's 6'4", 235. What more do you need?
Well, you need more than you're asking for. Once again, you act like everybody who gets drafted automatically. You're ready. You're an NFL player. You're ready to go. It's not the way it works. You know that. All right, come on.
Well, we'll pick this up on the back.
And not anybody who's drafted to play quarterback can be an all-pro, which makes you make it
sound
so easy.
No, but you also have to give him an opportunity to showcase his skill set in game type of situations. You can't baby these guys. When we come back, we'll be breaking down week 3.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
Breaking down NFL action week 3, we talked about the game in Houston between the Carolina Panthers and Houston Texans. Gonna turn our attention to that battle in Las Vegas, 2-0. Las Vegas and Chucky dominating win over the Steelers this past weekend. Got it done on the ground. The front seven stepped up. Miami coming off a blowout loss to the Buffalo Bills. Tua does have fractured ribs. It will be Jacoby Brissett. They're catching 4.5 points. The Dolphins are on the road, -115. If you want to take the points in this matchup, according to FanDuel, you want to lay it with Las Vegas. You lay 105, which is a pretty good number for a 2-0 team. Total set at 44.5. Juiced slightly to the over at -115, George. This game last year, remember, Tua comes out, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and they can't convert on the 1-yard line. His head almost gets ripped off by the defender for Las Vegas, and all of a sudden, Miami and Miles Gaskins run away with a last-second victory over the Raiders. Don't think that Chucky didn't think about that and has that circle for bulletin board material. This game is simple. Miami has no identity. They can't run the football consistently. Las Vegas getting production out of Carr, 382 passing yards last week. That front seven slowly developing into maybe a top unit. I can't take the Dolphins here. You heard me last week. I said lay it with the Buffalo Bills. I'm not confident about my team right now. I'm laying it with Las Vegas in this ballgame.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Look, the Dodgers are a better team than they're playing right now. Davis is playing solid. I know they lost 35-0 last week, but he got nothing out of the offense. I don't know what you're going to get out of Brissett here. He might even be better than Tour, I guess, at least the start this season. But the Raiders are on fire. All right, they're playing very well. I mean, I want to see anybody outside of a Raiders fan who had the Raiders going 2-0 to start the season. All right, Monday night against the Ravens. I know it was at home, but still, tough matchup against one of the better teams in the AFC. And then you go to Pittsburgh for their home opener, and you win both. Impressive as all hell. I mean, really impressive as all hell. And Derek Carr looks great. All right, he looks good. Yeah, the run game's been blah. Defense has been solid here, and they may just get better. Now, part of me keeps telling me they did this last year. You know, they went 6-3 last year before they cratered. All right. So I'm starting to take it with a grain of salt here, but they look good, and I think they win this game as well here. I think once again, it's more the Raiders than that. Even if Tua was playing and things were going better for Miami, I'm probably picking the Raiders in this game at home and the way they're playing. I might be worried a little bit about a letdown here, but that's it. Other than that, I got the Raiders in this contest as well.
Well, let me ask you this about the Raiders. In terms of the front seven, they are playing very well. I mean, compared to last year, even when they were 6-3, there were concerns about the front seven in terms of getting a pass rush, quarterback pressures, potential sacks. They are flying to the football. They knocked around Ben Roethlisberger last week, and I think they could do it with Jacoby Brissett. Now, Brissett is a little bit more mobile. Right. So, if in terms of more mobile than Roethlisberger, not more mobile than Lamar Jackson. So if they were able to contain him, you have to think that they're going to step up and force Brissett into the pocket in this ballgame. And when I look at Derek Carr as a whole, doesn't get a lot of hype. Right. People were running him out of town basically a couple of years ago saying he wasn't Gruden's type of guy. They needed a different franchise quarterback. When Mariota came in last year, it was, oh, give the job to him. This is why we don't need Carr. He's slowly coming into his own. He's developed into a good quarterback. I mean, he puts his team in a position to win. He throws a very good deep ball. And now you've surrounded him with offensive talent. Ruggs coming into his own. Renfro, Waller. That's not a bad group to have if you're Derek Carr.
No, not at all. Right? Waller is obviously his BFF, right? He's always looking for Waller. And nothing wrong with that. It's what he does. Ruggs, I think, is the important piece here. Because if he can become that deep threat, once again, blow the top off defenses, blow that roof off, then once again, the safeties have to back off. It opens up everything else. Everything else for the Raiders. You know, they're still missing a piece on offense, mainly that true receiver, right? If they had a guy like that, they'd be extremely dangerous here. Got to work on the offensive line as well here, as Carr has taken some shots. I think you said it right. Carr's also getting to a good quarterback. You know, some people are going, oh, I know he's over 800 yards in his first two games, over 800. All right, but some people are like, oh, he's elite. No, he's not elite. All right, he's not that. Yeah, but he's developing into a good quarterback. I don't know if Gruden will ever be happy with any quarterback, actually. You know, I think he's just that kind of guy who's always going to be, not quite his guy, that sort of thing. But Carr can win you football. He won't be the problem. I think that's it. He may not be the true solution by the end of the year, but he won't be the problem either. They'll have other issues here. But I like the Raiders this week. One thing I'll say about the Raiders, they did not really control Lamar Jackson. Right? Lamar Jackson rushed for 90 yards, but they made him turn the ball over. Right. He turned the ball over three times, which is fantastic. So that's what I think with Brissett. Brissett, if he's going to be on the run, he is more mobile. Certainly everybody's more mobile than Ben. You and I are more mobile than Ben Roethlisberger. Control, but you better protect that football because they're coming for it. And, right. It's sort of that bend but don't break it. We'll give you some yardage, but we're coming for the football. You better hold on to it. We're going to hit you.
Right. And I think the biggest thing, too, is the second half against Baltimore, they made adjustments. And when they got ahead last week against the Steelers in their place, they didn't crumble. The defense was up to par. Third down conversions, they were flying to the football against the Steelers. Hat on a hat. You know, so I think that's the biggest thing for me is that you sense a change with the physicality of the defense. You know, they're not maybe elite right now, but you can watch them and say, this is a different defense than we saw last year. When I look at Miami, I say, this team has regressed. They've regressed in the sense of they can't get the football to their playmakers. They can't run the football consistently between the tackles. They're consistently put into long third downs. They fail to convert. And now with Tua hurt, you can only go so far with Jacoby Brissett. Now, I hope he steps up, and I hope he pulls this victory out. But if I'm looking at this game realistically and objectively, Las Vegas is clearly the much better team after 2 weeks in this ballgame. So we'll see. We'll see. There's two emotional wins for Las Vegas, obviously, Steelers and Baltimore. Is there a letdown with Miami? Well, you have to see. So you're laying it, though, with Las Vegas in this ballgame, correct?
Yeah, minus 200 on the money line. I can't do that. But I'll lay the points. I will.
Okay.
I think as you said, the Raiders combining their things there. They're the better team. They're playing better. So give me Las Vegas.
Yeah, we'll see how that game plays out. It is a 4 o'clock kick this coming weekend. Let's turn our attention to the other 4 o'clock kick in Denver. New York Jets go on the road with Zach Wilson. They got blown out by Bill Belichick and the crew as a 5.5, 6-point underdog. Now here comes Denver, Teddy Bridgewater, Vic Fangio, 2-0 on the season. Everything is coming into fruition for the Denver Broncos. They have the potential to start the year at 3-0. Their preseason win total was 8.5. I mean, you get this victory over the New York Jets, you're looking really good in terms of the first half of the season, right? I like Zach Wilson to bounce back in a big way here. I don't know if New York covers this number, but if you're going to give me double digits, 10.5 in Mile High, I'll take my chances. You know I hate the Jets, but this is too big of a number, especially with Vic Fangio at the helm.
Once again, Vic Fangio not getting a Christmas card from Joe Lisi. Not that I'd send them one either. I think this is a bad spot for Wilson. All right, Denver can play defense. They can play defense. The offensive line's not very good. They can rush the pass. Without Bradley Chubb, who's gone for what? He's on the IR. They can rush the passer here. I don't think it's a good spot for the Jets at all. You know, Denver Mile High, not good, not good, not good. Everything points to Denver here. The question is, do you want to lay 10.5? Which I probably don't. You know, it's a high number for a Denver Broncos team. It's not a, you know, they're not a high-paced, high-revving scoring machine here, so I do worry that the Jets could do sort of what they did against Carolina. All right, the game's under control. We know the Panthers are going to win. Jets get a late touchdown or two to make it much closer than the game actually appears. That would be my worry here. I'd probably attack this game more of a teaser route and bring Denver down to 3.5. Even that's not great, 3.5, but that's probably where I would go with this. So you're going to go to 590. You're going to have to parlay. You're going to do a three-team parlay to get that better. Over-under, I probably do lean the over here. I think it's going to be some points.
Do you?
Over 41. I think Denver's going to score 28 of that alone. So I need two touchdowns from the Jets, maybe a touchdown, two field goals. I'm okay with that. I don't love it, but I'm okay with it.
I'm a little iffy on the total. 41.5 minus 110 either way. We're going off FanDuel here, plus 440 on the money line for the New York Jets.
Tease that down. How about teasing that down? Tease it down to 34.5 and 3.5. I kind of like that.
If you're asking me, I have no problem teasing the total down. I would tease the Jets up. And I know it's
17.5?
Yeah, well.
Six, I like it.
Yeah, I would take 17 with the Jets in that area. The only... I really feel that this is going to be a grind-it-out type of game. And I slightly give, you're going to think I'm nuts. I hate Fangio, even though they're 2-0. I think that's mostly due to Teddy Bridgewater. I know, call me crazy, but I hate Fangio in terms of an in-game manager. That being said, that's your saying, right? I think Salah and the crew have a good defensive game plan. I don't know if they're going to go into this looking to blow out the Jets 35-3 or something in that area. I think it's got more like 23-14, something like that, right? You know, a 37 total, and then the Jets do cover by like 1.5, something in that regard. I'd be shocked if Denver starts hot in this game and blows them out of the water. I just don't see that from Vic Fangio.
I get what you're saying. I'm not a Fangio guy either. Unfortunately, I think with the way the team's playing, he might get a contract extension.
No, don't say that. Don't say that.
They're playing so well.
I think
you're going to have to deal with them next year too, Joe.
Please. When we come back, we'll be breaking down Tampa Bay, L.A., Seattle, Minnesota. Joe Lisi and George Kurtz right here on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
I mean, L.A. put up 27 points in the victory over Indianapolis. You got to figure there's going to be points aplenty this coming weekend. I like the Bucs here. I'm not buying into Matt Stafford. I'm not buying into the running game, the consistency of the running game with the Rams so far this season. I know L.A. is 2-0. They beat up on Indianapolis and Chicago. Okay. But give me Tom Brady on the road. It's his first time that, right, you said this earlier in the week, first time that he's playing in Los Angeles ever, he comes out with a W and a cover this weekend.
I think this is one of your games of the week. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I do wonder if the Rams approach us like the Cowboys did, we're not even going to bother running the ball. Right, but you already got Darrell Henderson banged up. He's got the rib cartilage problem. It's a whether he plays or not, it's more of a pain tolerance thing. But either way, listen, if you look at props for Henderson, he's not going to play his full complement of snaps, no matter how you're looking at it. So I think you're looking at the under for any props you get for him automatically. Sony Michel, I don't think big games will be expected either. So we're going to put the ball in the air. Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. Yeah, that's how you attack the Buccaneers. You attack that secondary. Nick Stafford's going to do that with Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, Jefferson, and the like there. They'll put the ball in the air. I think they'll go in the other direction. You know, the Bucs are going to do what they do. You know, and right now they're doing it very well. No, I don't think Antonio Brown's going to play this weekend. Trying to get those two negative tests and, within 24 hours is tough. Or 24 hours apart, I should say, for COVID. So you're looking at, you know, gains for Godwin, gains for Evans. I wonder if Ramsey's just going to stay on his side, or does he travel to take one out of the game? You know, we'll see what happens if they decide to go that route. I have a funny feeling they won't. He'll just cover one of Evans or Godwin. You know, they're both great, so no big deal there. So I don't know if we're going to get quite as high-scoring game as some predicting here, but I think it's going to be a great ball game here. Hard not to go with the Bucks. Just hard not to go with the Bucks. The Rams are playing well, but I'm not going to bet this, not the game itself. There's no way I'm betting. Like I said, I wouldn't know which way to go here. 55? That's a lot of points, Joe. 55 and a half. I mean, they're expecting a 31-28 game here. Maybe.
JPP might not play either.
He might not play. He's probably not playing.
Right. It said he could sit versus the Rams with a shoulder injury. So, obviously, if Tampa Bay can't get a pass rush on Stafford, it could be back there like shooting fish in a barrel. I doubt that, to be honest with you. I think it's going to be a lower scoring game when I think about it. I think that the approach for Tampa Bay on the road, especially if Brown doesn't play, is that they're going to look to pound the rock. I truly believe they need the running game to win this ball game against the Rams. Look for Fournette. Now, Fournette, 46.5 is a light total, I believe, at -114 either way. I think they can run the football on L.A. You know, I believe that Indianapolis got away from that with Jonathan Taylor. He had 13 carries, 51 yards. You're winning the ball game at 1:21:17. Stafford comes right down, scores 24-21. Frank Reich and that offense panicked. They panicked in that ball game. They had time to run the football with Jonathan Taylor. They did not do that. I think Tom Brady recognizes on the road, in order to win road games, you need the running game, a la look at Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard when they went on the road to face Justin Herbert. Even though it's Tom Brady, he could get a benefit as well. He'd work off a play action if that offensive line is working and does click early on and they can sustain drives, he could have a field day off of play action.
Agreed. Agreed. Play action is a great weapon if you can establish it here. If teams have to respect that run, I completely agree with you. And I think it's one thing. I think it is important to establish that. One thing I also agree with you about the Colts that they shied away from the run. I think the fact that Taylor was so not good or really terrible on red zone runs inside the 5 yard line, they kept giving it to him over and over and over again. I think he had like 6 runs for -1 yards inside the 5 yard line. I think that's what scared them. You know, that's the red zone. You know, running from between the 20s and red zone is completely different. You know, the Rams were waiting for it. Yes, and they stopped Taylor. But, when in the open field, he was doing fine. So I don't think you can forget to run the ball there. I think with the Bucs, who's going to be that guy? Fournette, Jones, they seem to change each game here. But, yeah, I think they do want to establish the run here. I'm kind of liking the Rams in this game for an upset.
Are you? Okay. All right, if you want to take the Rams, I mean, are you taking them plus the 1.5, or are you taking them plus 102 on the money line?
I know I wouldn't.
I mean, you really think it's going to be a one-point game? Do we really believe that?
It's unlikely.
I doubt it.
It's unlikely.
Very
right?
unlikely.
How many games are one-point games? Yeah, it's not many at all here. I don't feel good enough to maybe a small amount here, just for giggles. I do like the under, though. That's probably where besides props, we always love our props. I love props more than anything else when we talk about this. I do like the under as far as the best bet on the as far as totals and the game.
All right, we'll see how that game plays out. 426. Actually, to me, this is the best game on the board. I know you have one team in Seattle that is 1-1. You have Minnesota that is a disappointing 0-2. Zimmer's actually costing me right now. I mean, unbelievable coaching decisions in back-to-back weeks. They're a 1.5-point dog at home to Seattle. And this is a funny number to me because you have Seattle minus 115. I just think the perception of Seattle is so much stronger with Russell Wilson and Minnesota. This is the game where I like the underdog here, believe it or not. I think Minnesota at plus 110 on the money line comes to play. I think the over's in play as well. I think this is the total that could be in the 70s. Over 55.5, minus 110. Do you have any confidence in either defense heading into this matchup? Wilson could have a field day. Dalvin Cook could have a field day. Cousins. I mean, the list goes on and on. But give me the 1.5. I like it, minus 105, but I think they strike the upset. I do feel they go to 1-2 on the year, Minnesota over Seattle in this ballgame.
Yeah, like the Rams-Bucks game, this game I'm probably not betting all that much. Not the straight-up. Props, absolutely. There'll be props galore, a lot of overs in this game. I don't know if Minnesota can do what Tennessee did. And at the end of that game, Seattle did not want to tackle Derrick Henry anymore. Dalvin Cook, he's a great back, but not the same kind of back. Dalvin Cook's also banged up. How many times did he come out of that game last week? It is so frustrating with him. It's more of the fantasy aspect of the game, but he comes out of the game a lot. You know, now he's banged up with the ankle. Certainly going to start this game. We'll see where it goes from there. Seattle?
96 yards, I believe. 96 yards in that matchup.
Seattle can't be happy about choking that loss because that's what you did. You choked the loss up to Tennessee. That's a game you should have won. And that should have been a safety at the end, too. The game shouldn't even gone any further than that. But whatever. The officiating's been awful, as it always is. At least the right team still won the game. But Seattle's got to be angry about that. You know, that's, once again, can't afford to lose that. I mean, you can make an argument here. I mean, Minnesota, you know, we told us earlier, this is pretty much a must-win for you. You cannot go 0-3. I know the division's not great. You're not worried about Detroit. You're not worried about Chicago. And, you know, Green Bay, hey, maybe it's not a must-win because Green Bay can never beat San Fran, right, of late. So if they go 1-2 as well, this is not a must-win. You'll be 0-3 and only a game out of first place. So maybe it's not a must-win. Maybe you got a little bit of time here. But you said it, you know, when you were talking about it. Man, you cannot be happy with Zimmer's decisions here. Too many coaches, and this is, once again, this is the old-time coaches. They're the guys who've been in the league forever. They coached to lose. You keep doing this when you're playing for field goals out there. Giants did this in their game as well here. You're playing for that field goal at the end. You better hope he hits it and nothing goes wrong. But even if he does hit it, you leave so much time on the clock for the opposing team to come down and get the touchdown or get the field goal that beats you anyway. I don't know why teams aren't playing for touchdowns. You know, playing for that field goal in this day and age is nuts, especially when you don't have an ace kicker. If you don't have Tucker, you're out of your mind. Dallas was lucky last week. They completely screwed up the time. McCarthy tried to, I couldn't see the play clock. I couldn't see this. They were thinking, get the hell out of here. You screwed up the time management there, and you were lucky that Zuerlein ends up hitting a 90-yard field goal. Was it 56 yards? And if Dallas wouldn't have hit that, and you lose in overtime, yeah, McCarthy, you should throw him off the plane. Too many coaches screw this up. They don't know what they're doing here. So I think Zimmer, you want to blame the kicker, is fine. But Zimmer didn't help any either. This was some weird coaching decisions out of him the first 2 weeks. It's just amazing to me, Joe, these coaches don't learn. They keep making the same mistakes over and over and over again regarding time management and field goals.
Well, I think Pete Carroll's in that boat as well. I thought he got. I thought the play calling and hit, the way they attacked Tennessee in the second half was absolutely horrible. And I understand you have a marquee quarterback in Russell Wilson, but Chris Carson had no part of the offense in the second half of the game. Russell Wilson did not tuck it and run. He did not make plays with his legs. They just wanted to throw the ball vertically, and as that went, so did the three and outs for Seattle. Look at that overtime call. You have a first and 10 on basically your 19-yard line. Why don't you get out a little bit? I'm not saying run the football between the tackles, but you could roll out Russell Wilson the way you did on the third down play on first down. He steps back. He throws the ball down the field into triple coverage. What was that? I mean, that's horrible by Pete Carroll in the second half. They did not adjust accordingly to Mike Vrabel and that defensive scheme, and that's why Tennessee was able to pull that ball game out. Now, when you look at Zimmer and you look at Minnesota, you gotta, if Cook is 80%, the way Henry and the way Tennessee was able to wear down Seattle in the second half, that has to be the MO early on, no? For Minnesota? Run the football? Oh, run the football?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the way Zimmer wants to play in anyway. Right. He wants to run the ball, run. So absolutely, they're gonna run with Cook. You know, you want to soften up the defense anyway. Cook's your best player, one of the best in the game. So yeah, they're gonna run with Cook. I don't have any doubt they're going to run with Cook. And there will be points put up on the board here for both teams. This is not gonna be a 13-10 game. Maybe 13 after the first quarter. You know, that's about what it's going to be there. There's gonna be lots of points put on the board here. I agree with you about Carroll, by the way. I think his play. I guess play calling, you make it in-game adjustments, halftime adjustments have been questionable the last couple of weeks. It's funny with Seattle. We always used to complain that they didn't let Russell Wilson cook, right? That they ran the ball too much. Now it seems to be the opposite. But they can't find that happy medium is really what it is here.
Yeah, he's and, cooking too much. But, he's cooking right. Buffets here. He's throwing 100 times a game. And they're not even like conservative throws. Every throw is like 20 yards down the field. That throw in the overtime, he
they're
threw
all or
two
nothing.
Balls into triple coverage.
They're all or nothing. That's really what they do. There's no underneath game here. It's either bombs away with Lockett or, hey, no, we're not doing anything else here, which is strange because they have weapons there to really move the ball however they want to. Maybe that's on Russell Wilson. Maybe too many deep balls are being called, whatever it might be. But they need to adjust their game plan. It's really what it comes down to here. Listen, it's two games of the season. I'm not going to panic too much. I also didn't like that decision by Vrabel last week when they didn't go for two at the end, when they went for the tie. I mean, they didn't want to tackle Derrick Henry anymore.
No.
I'm sorry. I'm running Derrick Henry there. I'm trying to win the game right there. I think he would have gotten the 2 yards. I'm giving it in the hands of my best player. It ended up working it out for you anyway. You won it in overtime, but you sort of got lucky there where Seattle didn't score on their possession first there. So, like I said, I think coaches sometimes make decisions where they're going to protect themselves from the media, from being criticized by maybe the owner, the media, the fans, and all this, rather than doing what you should be doing, especially in today's game where everything's geared towards scoring points. Like I said, settling for the field goal screen is always you're playing to lose. You're coaching to lose when you do that. You know, I hate that. Unless, hey, the situation, you went for it, you didn't get it, that's fine. You know, 3rd and 7, you threw the ball, was incomplete. Okay, I get it, kick the field goal. But when it's 3rd and 7 or something like that, and you run right into the middle of the line to make it 3rd and 5, or 4th and 5, and now you kick the field goal, hate that too. I can't tell you how much I hate that.
I obviously hate that. I get that. I agree with you as well.
As much as you hate Fangio, but yes.
I hate conservative coaches, but at the same time, if you're trying to win ball games, you have to put things into perspective. You have to know when to roll them and know when to fold them, right? Kenny Rogers, isn't that what he said? So we'll see how that plays out in Minneapolis. It's a 4:26 kick, Seattle and Minnesota. When we come back, we'll wrap it up.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
Wrapping up today's show, we're breaking down week number 3. Going to be here tomorrow as well, breaking down all the rest of the NFL action. But we talked about my top 5 coaches that I actually despise, and I gave one away with Vic Fangio. Can you guess the other 4, Georgie?
All right, we already knew Fangio. Anybody that listens to this show knows Fangio, and Nagy's got to be on that list, right?
Yes. Right.
All right. So we got 2. I got to think Cincinnati Bengals there. I remember you saying it earlier on our shows. Dale, he's on the list.
Yep. So you got the first 3. You're knocking them down like whack-a-mole. Go ahead.
Yeah. Those were easy, though. No, I have to admit, I knew those from listening to you. The other 4 of 2 are tougher here. I wrote down some guys here. I wrote down guys like I could see you hating McCarthy of the Cowboys. I know I do. Kingsbury of the Arizona, I could see.
Bing! Judge. You got four. Kingsbury.
Kingsbury,
this dates back to his days in Lubbock, but go ahead.
I'm proud of myself on that one. The 5th one's tough here. I think Joe Judge of the Giants because they're the same crowd. And can you possibly hate Campbell already of Detroit for 2 games?
No.
Can you hate the kneecap guy?
No, I'll give it away. He looks like a walrus.
Really?
Yeah. Andy Reid.
Oh, he would have never made my list.
Yep. Andy Reid. Yeah, there you go. Andy Reid. I said it. He just gets under my skin a little bit because look at him. He's got the best team in football last year, right? He's got the best team in football, and they walk through the motions. They barely cover games last year. I mean, come on. I could have coached that team they would have covered.
Well, Reid used to take a lot of grief. Remember, before they won the
Super Bowl. Hey, he's got a Super Bowl. He could take it now. So he's getting paid. He's getting paid very handsomely. I'm sure he could take the abuse. Don't worry.
I don't think it bothers him all that much. I'm pretty sure it doesn't bother him. But Reid used to take a lot of abuse before he really won the Super Bowl because his time management was horrendous. His use of timeouts was like, oh, my God, what are you doing?
Exactly. So we'll pick it up tomorrow for George Kurtz, our great producer, Andrew Torres. I'm Joe Lisi. Have a great day, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.